This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
I had to be everyday grind.
Night transmissions.
To see you could make it. Well, I've told myself that I'm not going to run my mouth too much on these old shows and keep my own interjections rather spare. So, here's the introduction to the show. This episode of Suspense first aired on November the 10th of 1942, and it's called Will You Make a Bet with Death? Well, will you, Bunky?
The thrill of the nighttime, the hushed voice and the prowling step. The stir of nerves at the ticking of the clock. The rescue that might be too late. The crime that is almost committed. Mystery and intrigue and dangerous adventures. We invite you to enjoy stories that keep you in suspense. Can a man stake his life against $25,000? Can another and cleverer man track him down like a hunter, stalking his prey and kill him within 5 hours? Can you make a bet with death and win?
For Suspense, tonight we present Will You Make a Bet with Death by John Dixon Carr.
Coney Island on a summer day. There's the beach, bright colored with bathing suits. There's the boardwalk, all straw hats and summer dressings. There's the Ferris wheel and the roller coasters. There is all humanity eating hot dogs and having a good time. And over there, beyond that souvenir shop, is the haunted mill. You get into a little boat. You float through a narrow tunnel into the dark while witches scream. But that fools nobody, does it? There couldn't be any real terror, could there? While the bands are playing and the crowd goes by and...
Ladies and gentlemen, a unique attraction. It hurts me to see you stand there and miss this. Only 10 cents, one dime, the tenth part of a dollar to go through the old haunted mill and get the thrill of your life.
An overstatement, if you ask me. One ticket, please.
Did you say one ticket, lady?
That's right, one ticket. What's the thrill?
Beg pardon, lady?
I said, what's the thrill?
Lady, the gals who come here with their boyfriends don't have to ask that. Attention, please, this way and mind the gate.
Thank you.
Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Get your ticket for the old haunted mill where ghosts will walk and corpses...
Give me some tickets. Hurry.
Just a minute, young fella. I know you want to get into the old haunted mill, but there's plenty of time. How many tickets?
I don't know. You better give me 10.
10 tickets? Do you hear that, ladies and gentlemen? Here's a young fella who likes the old haunted mill so much, he buys 10 tickets.
Don't call everybody's attention. Listen, I've got a better idea. Whatever boat comes after mine...
Yeah?
I'll give you an extra dollar to send that boat through empty.
Now, what's the matter, son? The cops ain't after you, are they?
No. It's nothing like that. Will you do it?
Well, money talks, young fella. Okay, go ahead.
Isn't there an empty boat here?
Well, really? You've got such a great objection to riding in the same boat with me?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that at all. Don't misunderstand.
Then you better get in if you want to go. This boat's starting to move.
Yeah, I better sit down.
You certainly had.
Look here, I want to apologize.
That's quite unnecessary. This place is rather childish anyway, isn't it?
Yes, isn't it?
But I've seen everything else, so I may as well see this. Here we go in the dark.
What was that?
One of the ghosts, I imagine. From a machine.
It sounded like him laughing. There isn't anybody on the boat behind us, is there?
I can't see. It's pitch dark.
Listen, Miss... Miss...
My name is Andrews, Betty Andrews. If it's customary to exchange names in a place like this...
Mine's Pendrell. Bob Pendrell.
Did you say Pendrell?
Yes. Do you know it?
Oh, no, not exactly. It's an unusual name, that's all.
I don't want you to think I'm out of my mind, though I very nearly am. But I've got 5 hours to go. Just 5 hours. At the end of that time, either I'll have won $25,000 or else...
Or else?
Or else I'll be dead.
You know, I wish I'd kept you away from this boat.
Well, there's nothing to get alarmed about. For you. I can't tell you much, but I had to tell somebody that or I'd have started yelling. There's just one other thing.
Is there?
In these places, they've usually got little dim-lighted rooms along the way.
Yes,
exhibits
and things.
Yes. Well, when we come to one, I'm going to get out of this boat and hide there. Just don't get alarmed, and don't tell anybody when you go out.
Why should you do that?
I think I see a light ahead.
Well, there is a light, but...
Dim, too. That's all for the good. It's... Yes? We're coming around the corner. Look, I'm going to have company when I get off. A waxed dead man on a pile of straw. Oh, I hope I can stand these noises. Goodbye, Betty Andrews. I wish we'd met at a different time.
Mind the boat!
Here, what are you doing?
Getting off, too.
Don't be an idiot. What's the idea?
You need looking after, Mr. Pendrell. And if we must hide, I suppose this is as good a place as any.
I won't have it.
Quick, there'll be more boats along. Over behind that dead man on the straw. He'll hide us. Hurry. Now, Mr. Pendrell, in the queerest place I ever get into, please tell me what this is all about.
I can't tell you.
You said it yourself. If you don't tell somebody, you'll go crazy.
Maybe you're right. It's against the strict terms of the bet. But this is the last day. And I tell you, I can't hold out any longer.
Lower your voice. There's a boat coming.
I wonder if you ever heard of my stepfather, John Destry.
Yes.
I imagine everybody has. He's a millionaire, and I'm not. I'm just a chemist, an analytical chemist. Not very successful. So if I'd had time, if I'd had money, I might have worked out a process that would have... Well, I think it would have helped in the war.
But he's got money.
Yes, he's got money. Well, my mother died years ago. This Destry's a big, white-haired, fine-looking fella. You'd think butter wouldn't melt in his mouth. He's got an apartment in the East 60s. Secretary, I never met her. Valet, cook, that kind of thing. Well, he used to invite me there. I wouldn't go. Then he got hold of a book I had to have. A German work on chemicals. So I went. After dinner in that study of his, over the brandy...
My dear Robert, you're quite welcome to the book. Don't mention it. Oh, what do you think of this brandy, by the way?
It's excellent, thanks.
Yes, I thought you'd like it. And now that we're all relaxed, comfortable after dinner, tell me something.
Yes, Mr. Destry?
You hate me, don't you?
Frankly, I do. And always have.
Good. Then you'll be relieved to hear I've always felt the same about you. But tell me something else. Did you ever know me to break my word?
No, I never did. I'll give you that.
I asked you, Robert, because I want to make a little bet with you. That is, if you have the nerve, which I doubt.
I'm afraid I can't afford to make bets.
You were always careless with money, Robert. Well, I've been thrifty. I saw that when your mother was alive. But you can afford to make this bet. Look here. In my desk.
Well?
$25,000, Robert. $25,000 in five $100 bills.
And what would I have to bet against that?
Your life.
What? My life?
There's the money in the drawer. Look at it. What wouldn't you give for that money? What wouldn't you give to have it for this precious work of yours that you're so fond of and that you've failed in miserably?
So far I've failed, yes.
Oh, I've had a fairly good life as lives go. My heart isn't as good as it might be, but doctors say I'll last a little while yet. But before I go, there's one pleasure, one little exquisite thrill for me to experience. I want to commit a murder. Yes, I said a murder. My bet is that I can kill you within 6 months, and that you can't stop me, and that I'll never be punished for it. What do you say? Yes or no?
I believe you mean that.
Of course I mean it.
And just how would you propose to kill me?
Ah, that would be telling.
You know, if I had time to think this thing over...
There's no thinking it over. Now, yes or no?
Yes.
You must need the money badly, Robert.
I do need it. But oddly enough, Mr. Destry, that isn't why I'm doing this.
No?
No. I want to show you can't play the Lord Almighty and get away with it.
Are you challenging me?
Yes.
You don't think I can do it?
I know you can't.
We mustn't get excited, Robert. There will be conditions to the bet, you understand?
What conditions?
First of all, you'll never mention this matter to anyone.
All right. That seems fair enough.
You'll remain within the city limits of New York for 6 months. You'll spend at least 1 hour of every day walking the open streets alone.
All right.
You'll spend at least 1 hour every evening in your own room alone. I may come to see you, or I may not.
Trying to scare me already, are you?
Finally, you'll write out a little note and give it to me. There's pen and paper on the desk in front of you. Write it now.
Let's hear what I have to write before I do anything like that.
You will write, I am a failure.
You can't stop harping on that, can you?
I am a failure, and this was the only way out. I wouldn't have done it otherwise.
A suicide note?
Yes. I intend to use it when I, operate.
And if I won't write it?
Then there's no bet.
All right, I'll do it.
It's now, let's see, 9 o'clock on the night of January the 10th. If you're alive and not in a madhouse...
Does that go into the bargain, too?
Yes. At 9 o'clock on the night of June 10th, given those conditions, you will receive $25,000. Can't you hear the dice rattle, Robert? You're playing with death now.
I know it.
Aren't you going to finish your brandy?
No, thank you.
Oh, then pour it back into the decanter. You heard me. Pour it back into the decanter. If you were as careful as I am, you wouldn't be where you are now. That's right. Always be thrifty. I can promise you, by the way, that you'll always be perfectly safe as long as you're in this apartment. But that's the only concession I make. I notice your hands are steady at the moment. I wonder what they'll be like a month from now.
So you were fool enough to make a bet with John Destry.
Listen, Betty. I want to tell you what else happened the same night. I got on a Fifth Avenue bus and started to look through that book that Destry gave me. It was a book that I wanted about poisons. Well, just as I opened it, I felt something sharp prick my fingers. I looked down, and my hands were covered with blood. He had sewn safety razor blades in a line down the inside edge of the cover.
Oh, no!
Yeah. A little white card fell out of the book. And I read it. It said, see how easy it is to take you off guard? Those razor blades aren't poisoned, but they might have been. Take warning. Betty, that was 6 months ago. 6 months less 5 hours of careful, refined torture. And now, I've got only 5 hours to go.
What's he done in the meantime?
Nothing.
Nothing? I don't understand.
Nothing at all. That's the cleverness of it. He's left me waiting, waiting, waiting.
Expecting something.
Expecting it every hour of the day or night. Once at the laboratory where I work, I opened a box that I thought was from a chemical supply house. And the Mexican tarantula, one of those furry spiders about as big as your fist, ran out across my hand.
Oh.
It was a toy tarantula. He enclosed a card, asking whether I didn't admire it.
Bob, this can't go on.
I used to think I didn't have a nerve in my body. I could hold a test tube at arm's length absolutely steady for minutes at a time. Now look at me.
Don't, please, don't.
But the waiting's almost over now. Walking the streets, wondering who's behind you. Sitting alone at night, listening for every step on the stair. He's got very little time left now, and he's got to do something. The question is, what's he going to do?
Well, maybe he doesn't mean it. Maybe he's only doing it to scare you.
And lose all that money? Oh, you don't know my stepfather.
Listen.
Huh? I don't hear anything.
That's just it. There's no sound of running water. The boats have stopped.
Then we're all by ourselves in here. Or with him.
Yes.
Oh, Lord, how I wish I hadn't gotten you into this.
Oh, I'm all right. Or at least I think I am.
I thought I saw him in the crowd outside, but I couldn't be sure. I'm seeing him everywhere.
Now, Bob, just a minute. Just tell me one more thing. Did you ever see Mr. Destry, I mean face to face, after that first night?
Oh, many times.
He came to see you?
He came to my laboratory once, yes, but mostly I went to see him. And why? Because it was the only place in the world I could feel safe.
He's promised that nothing should happen to you while you were in his apartment.
Don't you see it was part of the torture? Night after night he'd invite me. And I'd go. Right up until last night. Last night. We were in that study of his. With the devil masks on the walls. And he was sitting behind the big mahogany desk.
My dear Robert, I'm pleased and even touched to have you here on the last night before you,
Why don't you say die and get it over with?
Oh, well, let's not say die.
No?
The clergy contend that we never die. We only change. Now, let that be a consolation for you. Must you be going so early?
There's that 1 hour at home rule to our bet, if you remember.
I remember. You're keeping to the rule.
Yes, and I mean to beat you at this if it's the last thing I ever do.
The last thing I ever do? That's an unfortunate choice of phrase, Robert. My boy, you haven't a chance. Something's going to happen to you within the next 24 hours when you least expect it.
Will you answer me one question?
If I choose.
Have you decided how you mean to kill me?
I decided that 6 months ago.
And you still think you can get away with it?
It's a method which has never been known to fail. I give you my word of honor on that.
Is it sudden?
Yes, and no. Wouldn't you like to know what it is?
Good night, Mr. Destry. I think I'd better be leaving.
No, my dear boy, you mustn't go yet. Sit down. Pour yourself a glass of brandy.
No, thanks.
Then perhaps you wouldn't mind pouring me a little. My doctor allows brandy, though I'm forbidden spirits. I notice your hands are shaking quite a good deal. They weren't like that 6 months ago, were they? No. You were full of confidence then.
Oh.
And it grieves me to see you waste tobacco by lighting a cigarette and putting it out immediately.
Oh, it's no use lying to you. But I'm going to beat you just the same.
You wouldn't like to back out now?
After what I've been through?
You'd still have your life.
I'll keep it, thanks.
That's very unwise of you, Robert. Still, you must decide. Oh, I was expecting my secretary a little later to dictate some letters. But now, I think I'll leave her a message that I've gone to bed and turn in myself. Tomorrow, is likely to prove an interesting day for both of us. Here's your hat, here's your briefcase, and let me wish you a fond, peaceful, and happy good night.
That was last night, Betty. I saw I had 5 hours to go.
It's less than 4 hours now.
If I can keep away from the old devil until 9 o'clock.
I wish those boats would start running again.
Why?
Because it's almost as spooky in here as a real old mill.
I know.
Even that wax dummy on the straw. Any minute now.
You're expecting to see him move? So am I.
Now don't stand up.
It doesn't matter. If the boats aren't running, we can hear anybody who comes along.
I hope so.
Do you think Destry's got in?
Bobby can't have got in. He can't even be here.
Why not?
Because Mr. Destry told me.
Mr. Destry told you?
I'm his secretary.
You know, Betty Andrews, I'm sorry it was you who did this.
Did what?
You can't guess, can you?
Oh, Bob, I didn't come here to trap you or spy on you. If that's what you're thinking, I swear I didn't.
No. You only got me to tell you the whole story and lose my bet.
I haven't heard a single word you said. Bob, please believe that.
He didn't send you here, of course.
No, no.
And of course you never saw me at his apartment last night.
No, I swear I didn't. I got there late. He'd gone to bed. I didn't even take off my hat or gloves before I left again. Don't you understand, Bob? I hate him, too. I want to see you beat him. You've got to beat him.
You mean that?
Look at me and see if I mean it.
Betty, I almost believe you.
You must believe me. And?
Anything else?
We better hide behind that dead man, hurry. Those boats have started up again.
I wish I could tell you, Betty, what that means to me.
Come on, hurry.
Wait a minute, you two.
But
stay just where you are.
Where's that voice coming from?
Along the tunnel, I think.
But it's not Destry's voice.
No, it's the man standing up in a boat. He's coming around the corner. I can see him now. Hurry.
The old haunted mill, eh? My golly, if this ain't some place to make a pinch, I never heard of one.
What do you mean? Make a pinch?
Just what I said. Your name, Robert Penrill?
Yes. Who are you and what do you want?
Police headquarters. You're to come along with me. I want to see you over in New York.
About what?
I wouldn't know, lady, but it might be about the murder of John Destry.
Oh, no!
Did you say the murder of John Destry?
That's right. Somebody poisoned him last night with mercury cyanide. I wouldn't have got you at all, maybe, if the barker outside there hadn't thought the cops were after you to start with.
Betty.
Yes, Bob?
He's beaten me.
He hasn't beaten you.
Oh, yes, he has. And I know now the weapon Destry was going to use in killing me.
What weapon?
It never fails. The electric chair.
You mustn't talk like that.
Don't you see? He never once intended to kill me in the way I thought.
Are you coming quietly, Mr. Pendle?
Just a minute.
He's poisoned himself. But he's left evidence to show I did it. He's killing me the worst way possible. He's won the bet. The money doesn't matter now. If I'm in the death house for murder, what use have I got for all the money in the world?
Let me introduce myself. My name's Mullen, Inspector Mullen.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Inspector. It's a pleasure to be safe again.
I've had you brought here to my office for a little quiet talk. You're in a jam, son, and I want you to realize how bad it is.
You think I don't realize it?
John Destry was poisoned with mercury cyanide administered in a glass of brandy.
And only my fingerprints were on the glass besides his own. I can guess.
Mr. Destry's body was found this morning lying behind the desk in the study. There was an empty glass with traces of brandy and cyanide. Now, we haven't had the full autopsy report, but the smell of that stuff is pretty distinctive. Tell me, you're a chemist, Mr. Penderell.
That's right.
The boys find that 8 grains of mercury cyanide are missing from your laboratory.
Where he visited me a month ago.
And in your briefcase, which you took away from his apartment last night.
He handed it to me. I remember.
We found over $1,000 in cash. Now, take a look at this note. You ever see it before?
Look. Yes. I wrote it.
You admit that?
Yes.
It says, I was a failure and this was the only way out. I wouldn't have done it otherwise.
Where did you find it?
Torn up in little bits. You started to write a confession and then you couldn't face the consequences. But you shouldn't have left the pieces behind. You're infamous, my boy. Unless...
Unless what?
Now, if you'd like to confess here and now, and maybe we did a little deal about second-degree murder...
Oh, Inspector, why bother to string me along?
What do you mean, string you along?
There's no second-degree murder on a poison charge. It's the death house and nothing. He saw to that.
It's too bad you had to go and kill him, son. Didn't you know he had an aneurysm?
A what?
Fatal heart disease.
He said that he had heart trouble, but...
Heart trouble? His doctor says he couldn't have lived 8 or 10 months anyway. And you might have got something in the will.
So that's why he did it.
Did what?
Killed himself.
You still stick to that crazy story you told the boy?
He's going to kill me, isn't he? With 3,000 volts of electricity.
Inspector Mullen.
What are you doing here, Sergeant? Didn't I say I wasn't to be disturbed?
All the same, Inspector. I thought I'd better do it. There's a young lady here, a Miss Betty Andrews. I think you'd better see her.
I'll see her when I'm good and ready.
And I think you'd better see her, Inspector. We've just heard from Mr. Destry's lawyer.
Well?
He said that that young fellow there, Mr. Pendrell, inherits $25,000 in Mr. Destry's new will.
Did you hear that, son? Do you see what you'd have gotten if you hadn't gone and killed him?
He was keeping his promise, that's all. A fine lot of good it'll do me now.
But look, Inspector, I've just talked to the medical examiner, and he says there's no poison in Mr. Destry's body.
Say that again?
There's no poison in the old man's body.
Somebody's kidding you. An empty glass with the smell of mercury cyanide and a dead man with a congested face behind the mask? What did kill him then?
Well, if you'd like to listen to Miss Andrews, Inspector, she's right here now.
I think you'd better listen, Inspector. I've been trying to tell you all afternoon.
Go ahead, Miss Andrews.
I've been over and over it. But until they got the medical report, nobody would listen.
Can you tell us what killed John Destry?
Yes. Poison killed him.
But the sergeant's just been saying there was no poison in the body.
Inspector, will you listen? I was at Mr. Destry's apartment late last night.
Well, so what? You didn't kill him, did you?
The servant said he'd gone to bed. So I looked into the study to see if there were any instructions.
Was Mr. Destry dead then?
I don't know. I couldn't see his body because it was hidden behind the desk. I didn't even learn he was dead until late this afternoon. But I did see a full glass of brandy.
A full glass, did you say?
Yes. So I picked up the glass and poured the brandy back into the decanter. That's what he always made us do. And I didn't leave any fingerprints because I was still wearing my gloves. And... that was the same glass you later found empty.
But you still are not telling us what was the poison that killed John Destry.
It was the poison in his own system. He worked out this plot to convict Bob Pendrell. Only just as he stretched out his hand to drink the cyanide...
Inspector, I think I see it. It was his last great hour. He couldn't resist such gloating as he'd never known before.
That's it. His heart wouldn't stand it. And he fell dead behind the desk. And I think, if you study the expression on his face... you'll find he died laughing.
And so ends Will You Make a Bet with Death. Tonight's story of... Suspense. The part of Bob Pendrell was played by Michael Fitzmaurice. Betty was played by Leslie Woods. John Destry was played by Nicholas Joy. And in supporting roles were Ted DeCorsia and Charles Slattery. Again next Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Wartime, a story dedicated to the thrill of the nighttime, the hushed voice and the prowling step. Another adventure in suspense. William Spear, the producer, Mark Slobe, the director in the absence of John Dietz, and John Dixon Carr, the author, our collaborators on Suspense.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Next, from Armed Forces Radio, comes an episode of the series Macabre. This particular episode is called Weekend, and it ran on November the 11th of 1961.
space. He lives in a spectrum of the universe. When he ventures beyond this limit, he is in the unknown, a realm where strange forces are brought into play. When man attempts to misuse these forces, he is sometimes destroyed. This is Macabre. The Far East Network presents, in special performance, Macabre. Tonight's story, Weekend.
I can hardly stand to think about it. Such a horrible nightmare. Keep telling myself, maybe it'll help to talk. Try to remember. Put the pieces back together again. But the horror and the terror will never go away. The dead cannot come back. It all began, I believe, about 2 weeks ago, the night of the medical student's graduation party, held at the home of my fiancée, Gloria DuVernay. Ray Stapleton, John Tyler, Gloria, and I were the honor guests. Also, our instructor, the well-known experimental scientist, Dr. Peter Tartano. Tartano and I didn't exactly get along. He suspected I knew too much about the Gaylord case, which connected him with experiments on a hidden island. Also, his unusual interest in Gloria was apparent to me, if to no one else, and formed a further basis for a strong mutual dislike. Tartano didn't think that I qualified as a medical student, but he had to admit I'd passed the exam, so here I was. The party was in full swing when I arrived. Everyone was glad to see me, except Tartano.
What held you up? No party at all without the three of us together, eh, John?
Gosh, no. Hi, Dick boy. We thought you weren't coming. Got to have the old team together before the fun starts.
Righto. Look, you chaps, come closer. I have a bit of news to tell you.
Say, Ray, you should have to be there. Shoot.
What is it, Ray?
It's like this. Tortano's about to spring a surprise on us. Killing. You know how tight-fisted the old goat is. Well, he wants to do something for his prize grabs. Nothing extravagant. Just a weekend at his place, or something like that.
What place?
I don't know exactly. Couldn't be his small room at the university, so it must be his other place.
The one on the island?
Yes, I suppose you're right.
The island? Gosh, you really think he'll take us out there? I don't know of anyone who's ever seen it.
Now, don't let on. I told you about it.
Wow, Tortano's island retreat. They say no one else has ever been on the island. And that he spends his weekends out there all alone.
Doing what, I wonder?
Oh, I don't know. If he's working on something, why go way out there? Why not at the university?
Fellas, there's something about that island you should know.
Steady, Dick. Here comes that lovely thing you're engaged to.
Oh, hi, Gloria.
Hi. What took you so long, Dick? I was afraid you weren't coming.
You knew I would, Gloria.
Don't talk. Just dance with me. Nice to be in your arms again, sir.
Yeah. Where's your mother?
In the kitchen, fixing refreshments. Dr. Tortano's helping.
Oh.
Hey, Dick, aren't you drinking?
What? Oh, sure. What you got, John?
You name it.
Scotch and soda?
Boy, are you expensive. Okay, coming up.
Gloria.
Yeah?
Gloria.
What is it, Tom?
I don't know how to say it. I still have my internship, and there won't be much money.
Don't talk. Just dance. You'll be married as soon as you like. Oh, darling.
I love you so much.
I say, break it up, you two. You'd think you were the only ones at this party. If you don't mind, I'm cutting in.
Oh, Ray.
Take your hands off this charming wench, Richard. She's mine for a spell. And thanks for the loaner, fellow.
All right, Ray. But only for one dance. The lady is reserved.
Does he expect service? Not only fix his drink, but gotta bring it to him.
Thanks, John.
And just in time. Here comes Tortano out of the kitchen. I think he's ready to talk.
Yeah, looks as if he's had a few, too.
My friends, may I have a quiet for a few moments? I'd like to make an announcement.
I'll give you a proper introduction, Doctor. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I give you a man whose reputation as a doctor of medicine and experimental scientist has astounded the medical profession. Our faithful instructor these past 4 years, the man of the hour,
Dr. Peter Tortano.
Thank you, my friends. It has been a most difficult year for all of us. We have worked hard and accomplished much. Now I think it is time to propose a little holiday. So, I am inviting you as my house guests for the weekend. There is plenty of room, 10 bedrooms, 10 baths, 3 stories, plenty of space for everyone.
Wait a minute. Where is this place?
What's the matter, Crane? What are you suspicious of?
Where is your place, Doctor?
30 miles from here. There's a swimming pool, a tennis court, golf course.
Where is it?
Oh, Dick, please don't be rude.
Quite all right, my dear. He has a right to know, and it's on an island 20 miles off the coast.
An island?
Ideal for relaxation. I assure you every detail for your comfort has been attended to.
I'll bet it has.
Well, you can count me out. After 4 years of hell with you, you'll never make a four in 1 weekend. Goodbye.
So sorry, Dr. Tortano. Dick's been studying too hard. He didn't mean what he said.
Of course not. He'll change his mind. The boat leaves at 4 tomorrow afternoon. I know he won't want to miss our last party together.
I knew Tortano better than the others. This was no idle plan. Tortano never wasted time in relaxation. He often said, you have to make every minute count if you want to achieve success. I finally went to my room and to sleep. Hello?
Dick, what the hell's wrong? You still in bed?
What's the time?
Noon, Friday. You'd better get moving.
Oh.
Don't forget the tennis racket.
I told you I'm not...
Nonsense, old chap. We've all decided it'll be loads of fun. Just what the doctor ordered. Yes. Well, Gloria...
Gloria?
Yes, she's going along. She's right here.
Put her on.
Yes, sure. Cheerio, old man.
Hi, darling. Heck, we're going to have a glorious weekend.
Gloria, you listen to me.
Oh, Dick, we need some fun together. Now, if you're going to be an old killjoy, I'll just hate you.
Gloria... Tortano is no generous soul. If he invited us out there, he's got a damn good reason.
Oh, please say yes, darling. Ray and John want to go. And if we accept, that will make 5. And Dr. Tortano's manservant wants us to make 6. What can possibly happen with 6 of us there?
But I can see your mind's made up.
Oh, then you'll go. Oh, Dick, that's great.
I didn't say I'd go.
Oh, now, don't be stuffy.
Well, all right. Your heart's set on it.
Oh, you won't be sorry. Bye, darling. Dockside.
Yeah, see you, dockside. Tortano stood in the bow of the boat like some self-satisfied pied piper. Rain clouds were gathering for a squall, and the motor launch strained through billowing waves toward an island looming on the horizon. It was growing dark. A faint light flickered among giant trees to keep form in the distance. We landed about 6. It was pitch black. But I could tell by the flashlights that we were surrounded by massive oak trees laden with Spanish moss. We followed Tortano down a gravel path toward a large brick structure taking shape in the gloom. The storm broke as we reached the veranda. Tortano led us into a stately parlor where Wattis, the West Indian manservant, began to stack our luggage neatly in a corner. Wattis was a short, weather-beaten little man who never removed the black Quaker hat from his head. He kept glancing back, as if he suspected something were creeping up behind him.
Well, here we are, all safe and sound. Bedrooms are on the 2nd floor. I suggest you freshen up and meet in the banquet hall promptly at 8 for supper.
Even though we had just arrived, a feeling of uneasiness began to reach the others. There were 10 bedrooms, divided evenly by a hall running the length of the building. I selected one across the hall from Gloria. I just shut the door when someone knocked.
Dick, may I come in?
Yes, Ray.
Here's your grip, old man. Wantus brought them all upstairs. Mind if I join him?
No, I don't.
Yeah. Palace fit for a king. Looks like one of those plantations you see in the flicks. But this cost the old boy a pretty penny. You know, I've been wondering, Dick, where Tortano got the money to buy this place.
I believe he inherited something from his father.
Since he didn't make it himself.
Might have. He's a capable man, Ray.
He's a doctor, an experimental scientist. Enough money in that, I suppose.
That, ever since the Gaylord case...
They never proved anything. Totano didn't do that.
Well, there was no reason for her to die. Even I could have saved her.
Dick, don't hold something that may not be true against anyone.
I'm not. It's just a suspicion.
Totano knows you suspect him.
I don't give a damn what he...
Very well. So you dislike each other.
Forget it. Let's get ready for supper, Ray. Meet you downstairs.
Right, Al. If it's any consolation, I'm with you on one thing, though.
What's that?
This weekend out here...
Yeah?
Can't put my finger on it. But I don't think it was planned for fun.
My friends, I'd like to make a little speech. Excuse me. I am not much with words. Just a grumpy little man of medicine. But I always mean well. Now, it's been a long and tedious course these past 4 years. It isn't easy to become a doctor, and the hard part is yet to come for the graduates, that of internship, where you learn to weigh the actual values, where one slip of the scalpel can mean death or a hideous malfunction of the body or the mind. I welcome you to my island estate. You deserve a rest. So make merry and cast the cares of the world aside. Now to bed, children, to bed. Tomorrow will be a day of tennis, swimming, and fun-making. This will be a weekend you'll remember for the rest of your lives.
Hi. Aren't you sleepy?
No. Come in.
My bedroom is across the hall. Just wanted to say goodnight.
Please do.
Gloria. Darling, I love you so much. Let's be married right away.
Dick, you're so impetuous. But I accept.
Good. Are you comfortable here?
Oh, my, yes. Private bath and all.
So you have a telephone, too. All the bedrooms must have them. Well, better leave and let you get some rest. I'll lock your door when I leave.
All right. Thanks for dropping in.
Good night, Gloria.
Dick?
Yes?
Lock your door, too.
Oh, come now. This is a weekend of fun and relaxation, remember?
Don't laugh at me, Dick. I'm really just playing it safe.
Oh, sure. Good night, darling.
Good night, Dick. And please, lock it.
I don't know how long I'd been asleep. It must have been several hours. Something had brushed against my bedroom door. The sound made me sit straight up in bed. Then I heard something else. I thought someone was in trouble. Who's out there? Whatever it was, it stopped outside my bedroom door. I turned on the lamp, jumped out of bed, and bolted toward the door. The hall was empty. No sign of anything or anyone. Was it possible? I imagined this. When I turned to close my door, I saw it. A dark form bobbing in a doorway at the end of the hall.
I say, Dick, is that you?
It was Ray Stapleton.
Strange sound I just heard. My word, Dick, did you hear it too?
Hey, you guys! What's going on around here? Who was strangled?
Wow, what a gagging cough.
What's the matter? Is anything wrong?
Gentlemen, what's the commotion about? You're disturbing the entire household.
Now, hold on, Doctor. We were just trying to find out who was doing all that coughing here in the hall a moment ago.
Coughing? Nonsense. Must be your imaginations. You're all here, and you look mighty well to me.
Wait a minute. Where's Wantus? He's missing. He could be the one.
Wantus is standing directly behind you, John.
Is there trouble, Master?
No, Wantus. Nothing at all. Now go back to your bedroom and remain there the rest of the night. Do you understand?
Back to bedroom?
Yes. Immediately.
Aye, Master. Want us not come out again. Good night, Master.
But Dr. Tortano, the coughing...
Strictly imagination, I tell you.
But I heard it, Doctor, and so did the others.
There's no one else in this island. So just who do you think it might be?
Yes. I see what you mean.
Imagination is a powerful thing. So much so that under certain conditions, strong stimuli can compel you to think you have actually experienced something that didn't happen at all. Remember, this is the 20th century. We're not in the Dark Ages. No skeletons in the closet or secret wall panels. Return to your rooms, please. Good night, children.
I didn't sleep the rest of that night. I'm certain the others didn't either. They were losing their enthusiasm for the weekend. The next morning, after breakfast, I went for a walk on the beach with Gloria. It wasn't long before Ray and John caught
up
with us.
Hold on, Dick. I want to talk to you.
Hi, fellas. You sleep well?
Don't rub it in, Dick.
Gosh, no. We in the first place. That's what we wanted to...
You'd like to give up and go home today. Is that what you mean?
Yes, and all you're making it devilishly difficult. Now, I think we might still salvage a sporting time here. After all, nothing's really happened. But there's been dissension at this party ever since it started. And now there's a feeling of unpleasantness.
We can't leave the island. Wantus took the boat back to the mainland this morning for emergency repairs. And he won't be back until tomorrow.
He did.
Wantus has the only boat. There's no other way back to shore.
So we just have to make the best of it.
Dick, I'm with you. I don't think I like old Tortano.
Fine kettle of fish. The island's the kettle and we're the fish.
And Tortano's the fisherman.
Break it up. Let's go back to the house. I have a hunch. I think we'll soon know what this is all about. Tortano spent the day rechecking his notes and shaking his head. I didn't think him capable of feeling alarm, but his composure was rapidly leaving him. We swam a little and played some tennis. By evening, a cloudburst made a valiant attempt to wash the little island out to sea. After supper, a worried Tortano summoned us to the library. As we gathered, he stood up with an air of uncertainty and started to speak.
I wish I could charm you with a graceful speech and make you laugh when I grow tired of talking. I haven't been altogether honest with any of you. I brought you here on the pretext of having a wonderful weekend. That was only partly true.
All right, Doctor, tell us the truth.
You would better listen to me. There may not be much more time. Last night at supper, I gave you all a powerful stimulant. I tried to magnify your powers of imagination to the point where fantasy could be made reality by varying the dosages given each of you. The one coming closest to fulfilling the experiment would give me the correct formula balance. An overdose affects the respiratory system in such a way that the victim has periods of convulsive coughing of which he is completely unaware. 24 hours after the onset of coughing, the victim goes mad. And if my notes are correct... God forgive me, I didn't mean to go this far.
Yes, Doctor?
If my notes are correct, the victim may become physically anything he might imagine. The coughing started last night. I can't decide at the moment who may have gotten the overdose. I am also suspect, as I too took the drug. There are no guns on the island, no telephone or radio transmitter, and no way to get back to the mainland tonight. So we'll have to remain here. Go singly to your rooms. Bolt yourselves in. Don't open the doors for anyone. Your lives will depend on it. I'm afraid, my children, that before morning, we may have a madman among us.
We locked ourselves in our bedrooms and waited. The others agreed with me. Tortano was insane to invent such a fantastic story. He was the one we should be protected from. We were completely at his mercy. Our only chance was to humor him until Wattis returned with the boat and escaped to the mainland. I must have fallen asleep. The storm had subsided to a whisper. Something had awakened me. What it was, I don't know. I lay there in the dark, scarcely breathing, waiting. There was no sound of any kind. Could I have imagined it? Maybe I should get up and look. Perhaps... something was waiting for me to go back to sleep before attacking. But what? Nothing could have come into my room. And yet, somehow, I felt the presence of something out in the hall. It was just some sound, some clue as to what it might be. All I could do was lie here and wait for an unknown thing to happen at any moment. I waited and listened. I knew it was out there. Then, there it was. My God, I was trying to scratch open my bedroom door. I reached for a bronze poker on the night table, got out of bed, and tiptoed to the door. It was on the other side. I could hear breathing. Don't open the door, I told myself. It's just outside waiting for me to do that. Even with a poker, I might be no match. Then it occurred to me that it wouldn't be waiting unless it knew a way into my bedroom. Of course, it was coming in to get me. What about Gloria across the hall? Had it already been there? I decided to act.
You, out there. I'm opening this door. If you're still there, I'll kill you. What's that?
All lights are out. Pitch black. Something padded off on 4 feet. God, smells like a cat. It's so dark, I can't see my hand before my face. Got to get across the hall to Gloria. Judging by the way it bounded off, it must be at least 15 feet away. If only I had a flashlight. Can't see a thing. Easy does it now. Keep the poker swinging in a circle. I should keep it from creeping up on me. Look, here's Gloria's door.
Gloria, open your door.
Is it right here, Dick?
For God's sake, yes, hurry. Are you all right, darling?
I think so. What's the matter, Dick?
The thing. It's right across the hall.
The thing?
Yes, whatever it is, it's after us. I was afraid it might have tried to get you. Quick, your phone. Where is it?
Right by the bed.
Oh.
What are you doing?
Call the others. The one who doesn't answer is out there. Some creature. Let's have more light.
Oh, yes.
Really now? It's the middle of the night.
Ray, something's wrong. You okay?
Yes, I'm quite all right.
Good. Meet me in the library in 5 minutes. Ray's not the one. Try John next. Maybe.
Hello?
John, you all right?
Oh, hi, Dick. Sure, why?
Can't talk now. Meet me in the library in 5 minutes. Pretty well cinches it. Has to be Tortano. He's the only one left. If he doesn't answer, we'll know.
Hello, is it Donna here?
Oh, no. Who can it be? They're all accounted for.
Who the devil is this?
Dick Crane, Doctor. Meet me in the library in 5 minutes.
Are you crazy? Stay in your room and keep the door locked.
There's something fishy, and I'm going to find out who's behind it. Now, you be there. If any harm comes to my friends, I'll kill you.
We're not safe together in the library. And I don't believe a word of your wild story.
It's true. One of you tried to scratch open my door.
You imagined it, Dick. Here we all are, as chipper as ever.
Pretty obvious whatever was supposed to happen hasn't yet.
It happened to someone.
Impossible. We're all still sane. There's no one else on the island. This took place in your mind, Dick. Now let's all go back to our rooms and try to get through the night.
I'm wasting my time with you. All right, I'll stay with Gloria and protect her. But you'd better lock your doors because someone is going to try them.
Say, Dick is certainly overwrought. He couldn't have been right, though, since we're all so healthy.
Dangerous situation now standing here together. Let's return to our rooms.
Well, maybe nothing will happen.
It could start momentarily. I strongly advise separating immediately. Wait. Hold out your hands.
What?
I just remembered. It's been 24 hours. There is a certain symptom at this time. The victim's fingernails will have a bluish tinge. We can tell who it is. Quick, look at your hands. Hold them out. What do you see?
Here are mine, Doctor.
Normal.
Are mine okay?
Yes, yes.
What about yours, Doctor?
Take a close look.
I'd say they're all right.
That means...
Good Lord, it's Dick or Gloria.
They've gone to Gloria's room together.
We've not a moment to lose. Come quickly with me.
Dick, where are you?
In the bathroom, shaving. Be out in a minute.
Oh, hurry, dear. I don't like being left alone.
You're locked in together. No one can bother us now.
Oh, Dick, you sound so strange. Please come out of that bathroom. Dick?
Oh.
Dick? Is anything the matter? Dick!
Oh, that cough. In this room. Oh, no, no. Not Dick. Can't be Dick. I won't believe it. Can't be.
Gloria, Dick, open this door, do you hear?
Who is it?
Come on, no. I lock this door immediately.
Oh, where is my key?
Gloria, what are you doing?
Nothing, Dick.
Open this door.
Where is my key?
Oh, yeah, dear. Your life depends upon it. Open the door,
oh,
now.
Oh, here it is.
Just a moment, Dr. Giordano.
I'm warning you. Don't go near the door.
Coming, coming.
Hurry, unlock the door.
Don't do it, Gloria. Get away from that door.
Keep away from me, Dick.
was Gloria.
Don't look, Ray. I tried to stop her.
No. Well, that couldn't be Gloria. Not our beautiful Gloria.
Whatever it is, it's in peace at last.
So is Tortano. Throat clawed out. As if by a lion.
You have just heard Macabre, a special Far East Network presentation. In our cast were John Dewey, Shirley Ashe, Walt Sheldon, William Verdier, Milton Radmilovich, and Air Force Sergeant Bob Eddy. Technical supervision by Hiroshi Ono. This is Air Force Sergeant Al LePage speaking. Macabre was written and directed by William Verdier.
Macabre comes to you each week at this time through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Coming up next is X-1, with an episode called The Parade, which first aired on May the 1st of 1951.
Countdown for a blast off. X-5, -4, -3, -2, X-1. Fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years, on 1,000 maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company presents X-1. If you wanted to take over our world with a minimum amount of resistance and trouble, how would you go about it? Tonight we'll tell you how, with a strange and chilling story by George Lefferts. The Parade.
You are Mr. Sid Ryan.
The same.
My name is Lucha. I am a Martian.
Ah, pleased to meet you, Mr. What was that again?
A Martian.
As in Orson Welles?
Precisely.
I'm a Rotarian myself. Sit down.
Thank you.
Now that we've had our little joke, Mr. Lucha, what can Publicity Associates do for you?
I am interested in obtaining publicity. It has been my observation that advertising and publicity are the very backbone of earthly civilization.
Spoken like a true Martian, Mr. Lucha. Now, if you'll tell me the name of the client.
The client, of course, will be the Martians.
You don't give up, do you?
Give up?
The gag, I mean. Oliver!
Yes, Mr. Ryan?
This is Mr. Lucha.
Oh, how do you
Mr. do? Mr. Lucha claims to be a Martian. Take him outside, will you, Oliver?
I am happy to see, Mr. Ryan, that my telling you I am a Martian has approximately the effect I guessed it would. I believe we can do business. I have here cash retainer of $5,000.
Oliver. Take a look at that wad of lettuce.
It's the real stuff, Mr. Ryan.
And my client is prepared to spend many times that amount.
Well, sit down, Mr. Lucha. Oliver, get the client a cigar, the 50-cent box.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Well, now, what can I do for you, sir?
I wish you to manage a publicity campaign. A very large and important campaign.
Is the product established, or is it something brand new?
Something quite new. Now, what would you judge the most effective type of campaign?
Well, if the client has a lot of dough to throw around, a suspense campaign is best. First, you place ads in the paper saying, "Watch this space." Then, about a week later, you run an ad saying XYZ or PDQ, and you get people guessing what it means. Then, finally, when you've teased them enough, you bust loose and unveil the product.
Excellent. We will conduct a suspense campaign.
Of course, in this kind of campaign, secrecy is very important. Once the name of the product leaks out, it spreads like wildfire, and the whole campaign is kafloppo.
Quite so, quite so. The utmost secrecy.
You realize, of course, these things cost like crazy.
Would, say, $1 million cover expense?
Come again?
I said, would $1 million cover it?
Why, yes, I am at... You did say $1 million.
I understood that you have handled some very large accounts. Of course, if this is too big...
No, no, not at all, not at all. As a matter of fact, I seldom touch anything less. Right, Oliver?
Huh? Oh, of course, that's right, Mr. Ryan. Absolutely right. Yes.
You will begin, then, by saturating the newspapers, the radio, the streetcars with a very simple statement.
What's that?
I will write it on a card. Here you are.
The Martians are coming. Say, that's not a bad teaser. Got that, Oliver?
Yes, sir.
The next ad will read, June 1st is Martian Day.
June 1st is Martian Day.
What happens on June 1st?
The parade takes place.
What parade?
I wish you to arrange a parade up Fifth Avenue.
You mean like the Macy Parade?
Exactly. Except that the theme will be the world of tomorrow, the Martian world. My client would like it to be a gay affair. Balloons, clowns, pennants, pretty drum majorettes.
Say, that sounds terrific. I might be able to interest the department stores in a tie-in.
Fine. The parade will climax the campaign. On June 1st, the product will be unveiled.
Good enough. By the way, Mr. Luchard, what is the product? What are we selling?
Oh, no, Mr. Ryan. Secrecy, remember?
Yeah, but after all...
Ryan, all will be revealed to you in good time. For the moment, let us say that we are selling a concept.
A concept?
The concept of invasion from Mars.
Sorrell Talent Agency.
Sammy Sorrell, please.
This is Sammy.
This is Sid Ryan over at Publicity Associates. Listen, Sammy, how are you fixed for midgets?
I got midgets.
Fine, I need 40 midgets for a parade. 40. June 1st. And listen, Sammy, I want them dressed in little spacesuits.
In little...
You know, like men from Mars.
Mars.
Okay? And I want some movie extras, maybe 50 of them.
50.
Also rigged up like men from Mars. Make them look gruesome. Got that?
Gruesome.
Also, I need some horses with pretty girls on top of them. Maybe you can get that bunch from Maroney's Traveling Circus, the one we booked for the Fireman's Parade in Albany last year.
Yeah, I'll try, Sid.
Never mind the expense. Just get me the talent.
It sounds like you landed a big client there. Who is it?
It's a secret. I gotta hang now. Call me back, Sammy.
Right.
How you doing, Oliver?
Oh, fine, Mr. Ryan. Just fine. I got 100 small boys pasting little stickers. The Martians are coming on the subway platforms.
Good.
We got full-page ads in all the dailies.
Good.
And 10-second spot announcements on every local station.
Good.
It's costing a fortune.
Good. The more it costs, the bigger our percentage. Spend like you were going to the electric chair, Oliver.
Yes, sir. How are you making out in the parade?
If it comes off, it'll be the biggest thing since Bonham invented the midget. I've got Macy's, Gimbel's, and Saks to contribute floats. Everything is built around the Martian theme, see? Even the horses will have long feelers attached to them and funny-looking extra legs. It'll be sensational.
That sounds fine, only...
Only what?
Mr. Ryan, we don't even know what we're selling.
Oliver, my boy, do you think old Sid Ryan has been sitting here spending all this moolah and not putting two and two together?
You mean you know who Luchar represents?
Just by accident, understand, I have learned that Century Pictures is making a big new epic. One of those expensive pictures they make in secret and then spring on the public because they don't want the other studios to get the jump on them.
What's the picture?
A space opera titled Invasion from Mars. Get it?
Oh, I begin to see.
Also, by mere coincidence, it's supposed to have its premiere sometime around June 1st. You follow me?
Yes, but Mr. Ryan, Century has an exclusive contract with New Features Syndicate for all their publicity.
Suppose Century Pictures doesn't like the way New Features is handling their stuff. They want to get out of the contract, but New Features says no, so they have to get around the contract. A man named Lucha, client unknown, starts publicizing the Martian invasion. Need I go further?
Oh, I don't know, Mr. Ryan. Sounds pretty far-fetched to me, but I don't know.
That's what I like about you, Oliver. You're so innocent. Now, let me talk to Commissioner Patrick, please. Sid Ryan.
Hello.
Commish! Sid Ryan.
Oh. How are you, Ryan?
Fine.
What is it this time? You want to drop a man off the Empire State Building into a teacup full of water? The answer is no. Also, we're not arresting any fan dancers.
You know I don't handle fan dancers. I want a permit for a parade. June 1st, 5th Avenue. It's a Sunday. There's no traffic.
Now, look, Ryan,
Macy's gets a permit. Gimbel's gets a permit. The American Legion gets a permit. The Sons of Erin march every time Morton Downey sings The Wearing of the Green. Oh, don't give me a hard time, Patrick. This is too big. I have the 5th Avenue Merchants Association behind me.
Okay. Fill out the forms. I'll pass them along to the license commissioner.
That's my boy.
By the way, what's the occasion for this parade?
Well, don't you read the papers, Patrick? June 1st is Martian Day.
How is the campaign going, Mr. Ryan?
Like wildfire, Mr. Lucha, like wildfire. Everybody and his brother is going along with the gag. Yesterday, we distributed 50,000 Martian hats to school kids. I got some of the merchants doing World of Tomorrow displays in their windows. Every big novelty manufacturer in town is climbing on the bandwagon. They want to get into the parade with floats, giveaways, anything. Everybody smells a buck to be made. I wouldn't be surprised if the mayor himself declared Martian Day. I've even arranged for Commissioner Patrick to accept a $50,000 check for the Policeman's Benevolent Fund from the man from Mars. Oh, it's terrific, terrific. My blood pressure's up to 200.
Excellent.
I understand Century Pictures spent over $1 million making that space opera.
I beg pardon?
Oh, calm, calm, Mr. Lucha. Sid Ryan wasn't born yesterday, you know. I know who our client is, even if you don't admit it.
You do?
Always thinking, that's me.
Well, as long as you know, let's keep it to ourselves, shall we, Mr. Ryan? As you once remarked, when these things leak out, it destroys the surprise and ruins the effectiveness of the campaign.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Ken Daly speaking to you from our portable transmitter atop the reviewing stand for the much-heralded Martian Parade on Fifth Avenue. It's a beautiful sunlit day here in New York, a perfect day for a parade, and the streets are packed with thousands of spectators all eager to find out what this is all about. There's an air of shrill expectancy. Some of the kids and their parents have been camped on the curbstone since early this morning to be sure of ringside seats when the so-called Martians pass by. I've just had word from Sol Brown up at Central Park Mall that the Martians have landed from big pink balloons. And now, while we're waiting for the arrival of the parade, we brought some people up to our microphone to tell you their reactions to this most spectacular of all publicity stunts.
That's right.
Come on. What's your name, madam?
Miss Ada Shackley.
A little louder, please.
Miss Ada Shackley.
Uh-huh. And where are you from, Mrs. Shackley?
Columbus, Ohio.
I see. And I see you have your family with you, too. Two little curly-headed blonde boys. Are you in New York on vacation?
We came for the Shriners Convention with their daddy.
What do you think of Martian Day, Mrs. Shackley?
Well, it all seems very strange to me, but the boys have been pestering me to watch it, so we've been standing here 2 hours. I can't make head or tail of it.
Well, neither can a lot of other people, Mrs. Shackley. But judging by the thousands here today, there's a lot of curiosity.
Curiosity killed the cat, folks say.
Well, let's hope not. Thank you, Mrs. Shackley.
Mr. Ryan's here.
And this is Mr. Sid Ryan, ladies and gentlemen, the publicity man who's the brains behind the Martian Day stunt. Hello, Sid.
Good morning, Kenneth.
Easy, not so close to the mic.
Oh, sorry.
Hey, Sid, you've certainly lifted the lid this time.
Looks like it, doesn't it?
Sid, there's been a great deal of speculation as to exactly what all this is leading up to. I've heard some folks say it's a big war bond drive. Others think it's just to stimulate local business. And, look, I understand in the trade itself, the smart money says you're building for the premiere of Century's forthcoming extravaganza, Invasion from Mars. Now, come clean. Can you tell us what the real story is?
I can. I'd like to, but honestly, I can't.
Oh, man of mystery, eh? Are you going to watch the parade from the stand here?
No, Ken, I can't stand noise. I'm going out to my office and watching Gumpin.
Well, thank you, Sid Ryan, and good luck. And here they come, ladies and gentlemen. The first units of the big Martian parade, swinging down Fifth Avenue with fanfare, colored streamers, music, confetti, floats, all the trappings of a Mardi Gras. And here in the vanguard is a whole troop of little midgets in weird-looking pink and blue spacesuits, carrying Rube Goldberg weapons with signs painted on them. Let's see, I can read one which says, Atomic Blaster. Another one has a placard reading, We're Martian through Georgia. And here come the clowns, laughing and falling all over each other. They're giving free sugar candy to the kids along the way. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this is a happy, laughing crowd along Fifth Avenue today. A true reflection of the great sense of humor and good nature that makes America the place it is. This is promised as the climax of the show. And now a great hush has fallen over the crowd. It's quite a sight to see these thousands of people standing here expectantly, hearing only the great regular sigh of their mass breathing. And now here they come, ladies and gentlemen, the Martians, marching in booted, helmeted ranks, row after row of them. My, this is an impressive sight, ladies and gentlemen, and a rather serious contrast to the rest of the joyous slapstick parade we've witnessed. There are perhaps, 200 tall, broad-chested men dressed in metallic gray spacesuits with thick glass visors drawn across their faces. Each is holding an ominous-looking ray gun at the ready position. They're marching in absolute silence, keeping step perfectly, as though some mute, unspoken command were marking time for them. The crowd seems rather grim and serious now. Perhaps they're reminded of the actuality of war and possible invasion. They stand solemnly, silently, watching. Even the children are awed. And now the first ranks of the Martians are moving past us down Fifth Avenue toward the reviewing stands at the square. No one moves. What's that?
What's happening? Oh,
there, a woman, ladies and gentlemen. She dashed out into the street. For what reason, I don't know. She attempted to lift the visor of one of the Martian spacesuits, but just as she reached the Martian, she fell forward in a dead faint. I tell you, I've never felt such mass tension in a crowd as we're experiencing here right now, today. All sorts of rumors have begun filtering back through the audience. There are excited whispers of she's dead, she fainted, and now an undercurrent of what? They're really Martians. This is an example of how a single incident can precipitate mass hysteria, ladies and gentlemen. I tell you, it's a mighty reassuring sight to see the blue uniforms of New York's finest spaced every 10 feet or so along the avenue. Somehow, I can't explain it, this incident has begun to work on what was a moment ago a happy, carefree crowd, and the complexion is changing.
Did you see that? A woman fainted.
Of course I saw it.
What do you suppose she saw?
Oliver, old man, did I ever tell you you were too naive for this business?
But that young woman ran out into the streets to get a close look at the Martians, and then she screamed and fainted dead away.
I'm well aware of that, Oliver, since I paid her $50 to do it.
What?
The dramatic moment, Oliver, the stock and trade of the good publicity man. Relax.
Holy smokes, you sure think of everything.
Yeah, for my share of this deal, roughly $100,000, I can afford to think of everything. Shut the window.
Don't you want to see the finish?
We'll go down to the reviewing stand for the finish. Right now, I want to make a phone call. By the way, where's Lucha?
I haven't seen him.
Well, he'll be around.
Boy, those Martians sure look like the real thing.
How would you know the real thing if you saw it, Oliver?
Well, gee, I don't know.
Close the window, Oliver.
Oh, yes, Mr. Ryan.
Sorrel's Talent Agency.
Sammy, this is Sid Ryan.
Say, listen, Sid, I was going to call you. I'm awful sorry about those Martians.
What do you mean, sorry? They're terrific.
No, don't joke, Sid. I mean it.
Well, I mean it, too. They're great, great.
Are you in the bag?
Never felt better.
You mean it, don't you?
Of course I mean it. What is this?
There are Martians in the parade?
About 150. Of course, I only ordered 50, but
Sid,
under the circumstances...
Sid, what
is it?
Sid, don't you know? I couldn't get you a single movie extra. There's a studio strike in New York. I was going to call you, but I figured...
Hey, wait a minute. Where'd these guys come from if you didn't hire them?
I don't know. Maybe Oliver...
Oh, hold on. Oliver?
Yes, Mr. Ryan?
Did you hire those Martians?
No, sir, I...
Sammy, this is on the level, isn't it?
Honest, Sid, I...
Okay, Sammy, I'll call you back.
What's the matter, Mr. Ryan?
I don't know. I just don't know. I've got to locate Lucha. What's Century Pictures number?
Mr. Ryan, this is Sunday.
Oh, yeah. Well, get me their publicity director, Marty Sanford, at home.
Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah.
Here you are.
Thanks.
Sanford.
Marty, this is Sid Ryan.
Oh, hello, Sid. How's the
Fine, fine. Listen, Marty, this is dead serious. On the level, get it?
What's wrong?
I've got to locate Lucha.
Lou who?
Lucha, come on now, Marty. This is life and death. The guy you sent over to hire me for the invasion picture.
Invasion picture?
Invasion from Mars, the space opera.
Are you batty?
Marty.
That picture was shelved last month.
What?
Sure, back in the can. Too expensive and too fantastic. The big shots decided you can't sell a Martian invasion to the American public. And I never heard of a guy named Lou...
Mother heaven.
What is it, Mr. Ryan? You look terrible.
That's too fantastic.
What's too fantastic, Mr. Ryan? Is something wrong?
Open that window. I want another look at those Martians.
Yes, sir.
Look at them. Oliver, you were in the army. Could 150 movie extras learn to march like that in, say, 24 hours?
Not in 24 days, Mr. Ryan.
Not a second's hesitation. Not one other step. Look at the way they carry those ray guns at the ready. The only other time I've seen troops march like that was in a film of the Nazi storm troops marching through the streets of Paris. See those chests on? That's pride. Sheer, arrogant pride. Look at those chins. That's contempt. Nobody could act like that.
Mr. Ryan!
Oliver, get down there. Find that woman who fainted. Her name's Gloria Montex. Get her up here. Make it fast.
Here she is, Mr. Ryan. I can't get much sense out of her.
Stay away from me.
Gloria, it's me, Sid Ryan.
Oh, don't kid me. You're a Martian.
Gloria, settle down.
No, you're wearing a mask.
Baby, it's me, Sid.
And underneath, it's awful. It's all big green eyes and those feelers like a catfish.
Baby, snap out of it. Listen, what happened down there? You ran out and screamed like I told you, but the fainting, that wasn't in the act.
Oh, go away, please. Go away.
What'd you see?
Oh, no, please. It's too awful. Please, please.
Just one question, baby. Inside that helmet, what'd you see?
You won't get anything out of her, Mr. Ryan. She needs a doctor.
Okay, Oliver, I've heard enough anyway. You take care of Gloria here. Get her a drink.
Where are you going?
To see the commissioner. We gotta stop this parade before things begin to happen.
Okay, Ryan, what's the beef?
Listen, Patrick. I don't know what it is, see, but something's wrong. You gotta stop that parade.
I suppose you'd like the riot squad. That would get you a front page spread on every paper in town. Honest, you publicity guys give me a pay.
This may be a matter of life and death.
Oh, sure, sure.
Look, Ryan, I've got no time for your cheap publicity gags. I'm a busy man.
Listen, I'm trying to tell you I don't know where these Martians came from, who they are, or anything about them. All I want you to do is stop the parade and make sure they're on the level.
Ryan, I'm wise to your tricks. Now, if you let the sergeant show you out...
You won't do it, huh? An honest citizen appeals for protection and you refuse
it. I most emphatically do. Now beat it.
All right, Patrick. I'll go right to the mayor's office. I'll have you busted flatter than a fried egg.
Go ahead. I'm sure his honor will be glad to toss you out on that phony nickel-plated skull of yours.
You heard me, Ryan. You cannot see the mayor.
Adolph, please. This isn't a gag. I don't want publicity. All I want to do is maybe prevent something horrible from happening.
In case you don't know it, wise guy, something horrible is already happening. A couple hundred little kids are in the hospital with ptomaine poisoning from that phony Martian candy you passed out. Or didn't you know?
I didn't. We've got to stop that parade.
Sure. Sure, you'd like nothing better than to start a panic now. Maybe a few hundred people would get trampled to death. Think of the newspaper space that would get you and your product.
I won't stand for this, Adolf.
You won't have to, because you're going to get out of here right now. Go on, beat it. Get out. You and your publicity stunts make me sick to my stomach.
Oliver! Oliver, where are you? Oliver! Oliver!
It is useless
what?
To scream at him, Mr. Ryan. Your friend is quite dead.
Lucha.
He wanted to run to the police with some story about a Martian invasion. I found it necessary to restrain him.
Restrain him, you stinking murderer!
Now, Mr. Ryan, collect yourself. After all our planning, it wouldn't do to have everything spoiled, now would it?
Lucha, start talking and talk fast, because when you get through, I'm going to take you apart piece by piece. What's this all about?
But surely you know, Mr. Ryan, after all, you've been publicizing it for months.
Listen, you...
Please, do not interrupt. You see, before colonizing your planet, we Martians sent advanced scouts to study your habits, your weaknesses. We found that the people on Earth are predominantly conditioned by advertising and publicity, and so... We conceived the idea of treating our entire invasion as a vast publicity stunt. Clever, huh? After all, Mr. Ryan, who would suspect an invader who advertised his invasion in the newspaper, invited the public to his surprise attack, and spent millions publicizing his plans?
Holy jumping catfish.
You've done very well.
Then there was no product.
Ah, but there is a product. The product is... death.
What are you trying to do, Lucha?
We Martians are a humane people, Mr. Ryan. We do not like to destroy thousands where a few hundreds would suffice. In exactly 2 minutes, our troops will treat the world to a spectacle of death, which will bring the rest of your planet to its knees in horror. Nations will clamor to surrender.
Perhaps, Mr. Lucha, but not if I can help it. You...
Yes, please.
Operator, this is Mr. Ryan. Get me the field telephone on the reviewing stand of the Martian Day Parade. Hurry.
Anyone in particular?
Just hurry.
Reviewing stand, Sergeant Cassidy.
Get me Commissioner Patrick.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. You'll have to talk loud.
I want Commissioner Patrick.
Oh.
Patrick, Patrick!
Wait a minute. Things are quieting down. Now, what was it you wanted?
This is Ryan. I have to talk to the commissioner. It's a matter of life and death.
Oh, I'm sorry, you can't talk to him now. The chief Martian is presenting the PBA check to him. The Martians are going to fire a salute.
Listen, you got to stop him.
What?
Stop him!
I'm sorry, Mr. Ryan.
You idiot! The works! It's going up!
This is the operator. I'm sorry, Mr. Ryan. You've been cut off. I can't seem to get them back.
Doesn't matter, operator. Nothing matters now.
Tonight... X-1 has brought you The Parade, an original story written by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Joseph Curtin as Ryan, Joe DeSantis as Luchar, Alexander Scorby as Daly, Agnes Young as the woman, Ellen Deming as Gloria, John Thomas as Oliver, Arthur Anderson as Sammy, Wendell Holmes as the commissioner, and William Keane as Sanford. your announcer, Don Pardo. X-1 was directed by Fred Way and is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production.
Today's programming on KSOW is made possible in part through underwriting by F&T Art and Photo, located at 504 Main Street in downtown Cottage Grove. FNT Art and Photo provides the community with a wide range of art supplies, printing, and photo expertise, full-sized art posters, and popular design books. It's February the 22nd of 1944, and we have just boarded a train for another trip with the mysterious traveler. This time we're going to hear a play called The Good Die Young.
Mysterious Traveler. This is the Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join him on another journey into the realm of the strange and terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back. Get a good grip on your nerves. I hope it's not making you nervous, being alone with me here in the dark. Darkness stirs strange terrors in some minds, particularly those of children. For children live in a world of their own, a world far removed from that of adults. Who among us knows the psychology of the child mind with its devious thoughts and actions, as in the tale of The Good Die Young? Years ago, when I was practicing medicine, I brought a child into the world, a girl who was named Sandra. In the years that followed, she grew into an extremely beautiful and clever child. But my story begins the day that Martha, the housekeeper, was finishing her duties for the last time.
Sandra, come in here. I want to see you. Sandra!
Were you calling me, Martha?
Yes. I told you to come right home after school. Where have you been?
Oh, I'm sorry, Martha. I didn't hear you tell me to come home right after school. I'm sorry, truly I am.
Save your acting for your father, young lady. It hasn't fooled me for a long time. Sandra, since your mother died, you're becoming more and more of a problem every day. Well, at least after tonight, I won't have to put up with your lies and your thousand and one little tricks.
What do you mean, Martha?
Your father won't be needing a housekeeper anymore. I'm leaving tonight.
But why?
Well, I'm not supposed to tell you. You may as well know now as later. Your father is bringing home a new mother for you tonight.
A new mother?
Yes, he's just married again.
But I don't want a new mother. Daddy and I don't need anyone else. We're happy the way we are.
Sandra, stop screaming.
I won't have it, do you hear? I won't have it.
Your new mother's a very fine woman. I met her last night.
I hate her. I hate her. Daddy's mine and no one else's. She hasn't any right to him.
If you don't stop that screaming, I'll tell your father when he comes home tonight.
Oh, no, no, no. Don't do that. I'll be good. But I hate her and I always will. I'll never stop hating her.
That's a fine way to talk. Perhaps I ought to warn the poor woman about Sandra. Well, then it's none of my business. Besides, she'll find out about her soon enough.
Stephen, it's ridiculous you're carrying me across the threshold.
Hi, darling. It's tradition in my family to carry the bride over the threshold.
There you are.
Oh, Stephen, what a lovely house. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you haven't seen the best part of it yet. Sandra.
Do you think she'll like me, Stephen? I do so want her to.
Of course she will.
Perhaps you should have told her about us, instead of bragging it to her so unexpectedly like
this. Oh, nonsense, Helen. I know my daughter. She's a wonderful child. And she'll fall madly in love with you at the first sight. Just as her father did. Sandra, where are you? Daddy.
Daddy, you're home early. Oh, I'm so glad.
How are you, darling?
Oh, Daddy.
I have a surprise for you.
A surprise?
Mm-hmm. Sandra, this is Helen. Helen, I want you to meet my daughter, Sandra.
Hello, Sandra.
Hello.
Darling, the surprise I just mentioned is Helen. We were married this afternoon. That means that Helen is now your mother.
Oh, Daddy, that's wonderful. Now I'll have a mother just like all the other girls do. Oh, I'm so glad.
So am I, Sandra. And I'm sure we're all going to be very happy together.
Of course we are.
That night, after the family had said goodbye to Martha and seen her off, Sandra was sent to bed. She lay quietly in the darkness, thinking. Occasionally, she would speak softly to her doll, Barbara.
She hasn't any right being here, Barbara. Daddy and I were perfectly happy until she came along. Tonight, he didn't even notice me. Just kept looking at her. Well, she shan't have him. He's always been mine, and he always will be. There. That's enough of that. Now, let me see.
Second time this afternoon, I've asked you not to pound the keys that way. That's no way to play.
I'm sorry, Mother.
It's not only the piano, dear. There are many other little things. And you pay no attention when I speak to you about them.
I don't mean to do them, Mother. I just forget.
Well, please try to remember, dear. Now, I want you to play the piano as you did last night for Daddy. He was very pleased.
Yes, Mother.
I thought I asked you to stop pounding the piano like that.
But, Mother, I was just composing a new piece for Daddy.
Well, that wasn't music, Sandra, but just noise. That'll be enough for today.
Hello, beautiful.
How are you, darling?
Well, why wasn't Sandra at the door to meet me? She's all right, isn't she?
Oh, of course, dear. Stephen?
Hmm?
I was a bit angry with Sandra this afternoon.
Angry with Sandra? Why, what'd she do?
Well, several times this afternoon I had to speak to her about pounding the piano, being loud and discordant.
Huh. Well, that isn't like Sandra. You know how well she plays.
Yes, of course. That wasn't the way she played today.
Well, I'll go up and see her.
All right. Supper will be ready soon.
All right, Helen. Why, Sandra. What's this?
Oh, Daddy, Daddy.
Well, what's wrong? You never cry.
I was only trying to compose a new piece for your birthday next month.
A new piece for my birthday?
Yes. I wanted to surprise you.
Oh, there, there, dear. You mustn't cry. I'm sure, Mother, I understand you didn't mean to be bad. Now, here, let me wipe your tears.
Oh, Daddy, I love you so. I just wanted to compose something wonderful for you.
I understand, darling.
Oh, Daddy. You always understand.
Is supper ready, dear?
Mm-hmm. Where's Sandra?
She'll be down in a minute. Helen.
Yes, Stephen?
She really didn't mean to pound on the piano and get on your nerves. Just she was trying to compose a new piece for me.
But, Stephen, it wasn't music. It was just noise.
Well, you mustn't be harsh with her. You know what children are like and their enthusiasm. They forget what they're told.
But, Stephen, I don't know exactly what to say.
It's just a question of being patient with her, winning her love.
All right, Stephen. Perhaps I was a bit impatient with her. You know I want nothing more than for the three of us to be happy together.
I know that, darling. And the three of us will be happy together.
In the weeks that followed, Helen tried to overlook Sandra's slamming of doors, constant droppings of objects, and other nerve-wracking incidents. In time, she felt, Sandra would come to accept her love and guidance. It was just a matter of patience.
Sandra, is that you?
Yes, Mother.
Please sit down, dear. I want to talk to you.
All right, but do hurry. Daddy will be home soon.
Sandra, every day I've been giving you milk money for school. Why haven't you been buying milk with that money?
But I have been, Mother.
Now, please, Sandra, I won't punish you. I just want to know what you've been doing with that money.
I've been buying milk with it.
Please, Sandra. Mrs. Gordon, your teacher, told me you haven't bought milk for almost a month now.
But I have. She just doesn't
Sandra,
happen to...
Sandra, I won't have you lying to me. Now, that's your father. We'll see what he has to say about this.
You don't understand. You just don't understand.
Stephen?
Hello, darling. Oh, Sandra, what are you crying about?
I'm sorry, Stephen, but Sandra's been misbehaving. I think you'd better speak to her.
You just don't understand.
What's she done, Helen?
Mrs. Gordon, her teacher, told me today that for the past month, Sandra hasn't been buying milk with her milk money.
Is that true, Sandra?
And what's worse, Stephen, when I asked Sandra about it, she lied and said that she had been buying milk at school.
Why, Sandra, it isn't like you to lie about things.
I didn't mean to lie about it. I just wanted to keep it a surprise.
What a surprise.
Your birthday present.
Oh?
I saved my milk money so that I could buy you a pipe. It's here in this box.
But Sandra, you know I'd have given you money to buy a birthday present for Daddy.
It isn't the same thing. I wanted to buy him a present with my own money.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sandra. Well, you might have told me about it when I asked you.
And then it wouldn't have been a real surprise. I did want to surprise Daddy so.
But you have, darling. This is a beautiful pipe.
No. The surprise is spoiled. Your birthday isn't till tomorrow.
Well, this is much better, darling. It means I'll be able to smoke this pipe tonight. Oh, now, please stop crying. You go upstairs and wash your face and hands, huh?
All right, Daddy.
I'm sorry, Stephen, but I had no idea what she'd done with the money. And she did lie when I asked her about it.
Well, if you'd only have a little more faith in her, Helen. I know it's difficult to understand her at times, but that's because as a child she looks at things differently.
I'm sorry, Stephen, if you think I've failed with her.
Oh, but you haven't, Helen. I'm sure that in time she'll come to love you as much as she loves me.
I don't know, Stephen. I often wonder about that.
As the weeks went by, Helen found herself coming no closer to winning Sandra's confidence. It wasn't that Sandra was unfriendly, but there was an air of reserve about her, which vanished only in her father's presence. Helen felt Stephen watching her anxiously when Sandra was about, and sought to reassure him. Her one thought was to preserve their happiness.
Hello, Helen.
Hello, dear.
Now, what happened to that vase, dear?
Sandra broke it.
Huh? Well, accidents will happen.
Stephen, this is the fourth piece she's broken in 2 weeks. And each of them were pieces I've treasured, had for years.
Why, Helen, you sound as though Sandra had deliberately broken those vases because they were yours.
Well, why is it that only my things are broken?
Oh, Helen, surely you don't believe she's deliberately breaking your things.
I don't know what to believe. The first few times I thought it was an accident, but now...
But Helen...
Oh, please, Stephen, let's not quarrel. Perhaps I'm wrong. I admit I haven't any proof. It's just all the little things adding up.
Helen, what are you talking about?
Oh, you wouldn't understand even if I told you.
Where's Sandra?
In her room, I suppose.
Well, I'll go up and see what she's doing. Huh?
All right.
Sandra, it's Daddy. Are you in your room? Funny, she isn't here. Hello, what's this? A note addressed to me. Dear Daddy, I'm sorry about the broken vase. Tried my best to be a good girl, but everything I do seems wrong. I make Mother very unhappy, so I'm running away. I love you very much and always will. Your daughter, Sandra.
After searching vainly for an hour in the dark and cold, Stephen returned and notified the police. All through the long hours of the night, he and Helen sat up, not saying a word, each afraid to speak, for fear of what might be said. As the first rays of dawn showed, the doorbell rang. Stephen rushed to answer it.
Mr. Hammond?
Sandra.
Oh, Daddy, Daddy.
Darling, darling, everything's all right now.
I'm the police patron from the 55th Street Station, Mr. Hamilton. One of the officers on the force just found her.
Thank you. Thank you very much for bringing her home.
Oh, that's all right, Mr. Hamilton. It's our job. Goodbye.
Goodbye. There, dear. Don't cry.
Oh, Daddy, it was so dark out there. And I thought I'd never see you again.
What a thing to say.
How do you feel, Sandra? Do you want me to take Stephen and put him to bed?
No, I'll do it, Helen.
All right, Stephen. Just as you say. Is she all right, Stephen?
Uh-huh. She just fell asleep. I hope her being out all night won't have any after effects.
Stephen, you feel I'm to blame for her running away, don't you?
Of course not, Helen. It's just that... Well, you don't seem to understand her.
But, Stephen, I've tried so hard. Oh, it's no use. She doesn't want me here, never has.
Helen, how can you talk like that? Why, she was delighted the day I brought you here as my wife.
Yes, I thought she was in the beginning. But now I know she was just pretending.
Pretending?
Yes, Stephen. From the first moment she saw me, she resented me. She feels I've come between you, taken her place in your affection.
Oh, Helen, how can you say such
a thing? It's true, I tell you. She sees me as a rival for your love.
You're just imagining all that.
I'm not, I tell you. Oh, it's no use, Stephen. We can't go on this way.
What do you mean?
Don't you see? We aren't happy anymore. Instead of things improving, they get worse. Perhaps it would be best if we were to separate.
Helen, I won't hear of it. I love you, darling. I wouldn't want to live without you. Whatever misunderstandings we may have about Sandra, I'm sure we can straighten them out.
I don't know, Stephen.
If you love me, Helen, you won't give up so easily. Please, say you won't leave.
All right, Stephen. I won't leave. Perhaps we will be able to work this out. I hope so.
Sandra, you awake, darling?
Yes, Daddy.
Sandra, Mother and I were very upset when you ran away last night. Mother seems to think you ran away because you couldn't get along with her. She felt so badly about it, she wanted to go away.
She did?
Yes. But I told her how much we both loved and needed her, so she's promised to stay.
Oh, I see.
Sandra, will try to be a good girl and do as Mother wants, won't you? It would make Daddy very happy.
Oh, Daddy, I'd do anything to make you happy, anything.
That's a good girl, darling. Now, you get up and get dressed, huh? I'll wait for you downstairs.
All right, Daddy. He just doesn't understand. He should have let her go, but she's still here. And she's going to stay. I won't have it. I won't have it. I hate her. I hate her.
A week passed. A week in which Sandra's behavior pleased Helen no end. At last it seemed they were going to be the happy family she had always dreamed they would be.
Helen!
Yes, dear?
Will you bring my coat with you when you come downstairs? Sandra and I are going for a walk.
All right, Stephen. I'll get it and be right down.
Daddy, can we walk down to the river?
Oh, we won't have enough time for that, Sandra.
Stephen?
Hmm?
I have your coat, but I can't find your scarf.
Oh, the scarf's down here, Helen. Just bring the coat.
Oh, all right. Stephen, I hope...
Helen! Helen, are you all right? Helen, speak to me.
Daddy, is she dead?
No, Sandra, don't talk like that. Quick, phone Dr. Smith at once.
I arrived at the Hamilton home to find Helen suffering from shock, but otherwise unhurt. I was somewhat disturbed, however, to find her very nervous and run down.
She'll be all right, won't she, Doctor?
Yes, of course. I'm going to leave you a prescription, Mrs. Hamilton. It's something that will help quiet your nerves. You ought to take it twice a day. Ah, here's the prescription, Mr. Hamilton.
Thank you, Doctor. I'll have it filled at once.
Well, Sandra, how are you? You've been so quiet, I hardly knew you were here.
I'm fine, thank you.
You're growing up to be quite a young lady. Are you still troubled by nightmares?
Yes, she still has them once in a while.
No, it's just her nerves. If she continues to have them, you might give her some of the medicine I've prescribed for your wife. Well, I must be leaving. Goodbye, Mrs. Hamilton, and stay in bed a few days.
I will, Doctor. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Doctor. Well, darling, you gave us quite a scare.
Yes, I slipped on something on the top step.
Hmm. You must have slipped on a marble, dear. I found 7 or 8 of them on the top step.
A marble? Sandra, were they your marbles?
No, Mother. They belonged to Margie. She must have left them on the stairs when we were playing here.
Oh, I see.
It wasn't my fault. Truly it wasn't.
Of course it wasn't, Sandra. Mother knows you wouldn't leave marbles lying around where she could slip on them. Isn't that so, Ellen?
Yes, Stephen. I'm sure Sandra wouldn't want anything to happen to me. Sandra, will you come into Mother's room a moment, please?
Yes, Mother.
The medicine that Dr. Smith prescribed for me is in the bathroom. Will you get it for me, please?
All right, Mother.
You'll find it in the medicine chest. It's in a blue bottle.
Yes, I know what it looks like. Oh, here it is.
That's fine, Sandra. Just bring it to me.
Here you are, Mother.
Thank you, dear. Oh, Sandra, this isn't the medicine that Dr. Smith prescribed for me. Didn't you read the label? This bottle has poison in it.
Poison?
Well, yes. It's right here in red letters on the label.
Oh, I'm sorry, but this bottle is blue, too. It looks just like the one with your medicine.
Yes, it does at that. Now, I'll put this bottle of poison back and get me my medicine.
Yes, Mother.
I'll have to get rid of that poison. It's too dangerous to keep in the medicine chest.
Would have been awful if you took the poison, wouldn't it, Mother? Or you might have died. No, go away. I hate you. Oh, I hate you. He's mine. You shan't have him. He's mine. We don't want
darling,
you. We
darling,
don't want
wake
you.
Up, wake up, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, Daddy. Daddy, don't leave me. Don't leave me.
Well, of course I won't, Sandra.
Stephen, she's so frightened.
Yes, these nightmares leave her nervous for hours. Darling, there's nothing to cry about now.
Oh, Daddy, I was so frightened.
Come here, Mom, will you please?
All right, Ellen.
Oh, Daddy, don't leave me.
No, no, Sandra.
leave.
I'm not going to leave you. I'm just trying to see what Mother wants. What is it, Helen?
Stephen, Dr. Smith said if she had a nightmare, some of the medicine he prescribed for me would help her.
Well, Sandra doesn't like taking medicine.
But this medicine's very easy to take, and it'll have her asleep in no time.
Oh, if you think it's best.
Yes, I'm sure it is. Now, you go back to Sandra while I get the medicine and the glass.
All right, Helen. Now, Sandra, you must stop your crying. Daddy's here.
Don't go away, Daddy. I want you to stay with me.
Of course I'll stay with you. What were you dreaming about, dear?
I don't know. It was all so mixed up. Oh, Daddy, will you always love me? More than anybody else in the world?
Of course. Now, stop your crying.
All right, Stephen, I have it. Now, if you just have Sandra sit up.
Come on, darling. Sit up now. That's it.
What's Mother doing?
She's pouring you some medicine. It'll help you sleep, darling.
Medicine?
Yes. It's the same medicine Mother takes for her own nurse.
No! No, I don't want it!
Now, please, Sandra. It'll make you feel much better.
No, don't come near me. I don't want
it. Sandra, Mother takes it twice a day. There's nothing to it.
No, I won't take it. I won't.
Perhaps you'd better let it go, Helen.
Nonsense, Stephen. She'll have us up all night if she doesn't take it.
Right.
Now, Sandra, stop being a baby and take this medicine.
No, Daddy, don't let her make me take it. Don't let her.
Sandra. Are you going to let me give you this quietly, or do I have to make you take it?
No, no, it'll kill me. I know it will.
Let me hold your head. That's it.
No.
Now, Sandra, stop clenching your teeth. Open your mouth. Do you hear?
Daddy, don't let her hurt me.
There, he's taken it. All this fuss over nothing.
Helen, she's talking.
Daddy, Daddy, it burns.
Sandra, what's wrong?
It's burning me, Daddy. Help me! Help me! I can't breathe!
Helen, quick! Call Dr. Smith. Tell him it's an emergency.
Stephen, here's Dr. Smith.
Let me see her. She's been unconscious for 10 minutes now. Doctor, you must do something.
I'm afraid it's too late, Mr. Hamilton. She's dead.
Oh, no! No, she can't be!
I'm sorry.
How can she be? We only gave her the medicine you prescribed for Helen.
Yes, here it is.
Let me see it. But this medicine wouldn't kill her. It's only a nerve tonic. You can see...
Doctor, what is it?
Why, this is the bottle, all right. But the medicine in it isn't the medicine I prescribed.
But it is. I took some of it last night.
I assure you, this isn't the medicine I prescribed.
Then what is in that bottle?
It smells like... carbolic acid.
Carbolic acid?
But that's impossible. Look at the label. You can see it's my medicine.
Yes, the label's right, but someone poured out the medicine I prescribed and replaced it with carbolic acid.
Oh, no.
But why? Why should anyone want to do such a thing? Who could possibly want to kill Sandra? Everyone loved her. Ask Helen. She'll tell you that Sandra...
Stephen, why are you looking at me like that? Surely you don't believe I poisoned her. Stephen. No. No.
This is the mysterious traveler again. Have you enjoyed our little trip? By the way, do you have a child in your home? If so, I do trust it isn't angry with you. You can't be too careful with children. Why, I recall another child who, after being punished by his parents, took a razor and... Oh, you're getting off at the next stop. I'm sorry. Perhaps you'll join me again soon. I take this same train every week. At the same time.
You've just heard Chapter 13 of The Mysterious Traveler, a series of dramas of the strange and unusual, brought to you each week by station WOR. In tonight's program, The Good Die Young, Betty Jane Tyler played Sandra. The Mysterious Traveler, written by Bob Arthur and David Cogan, is directed by Jock McGregor. Original music was played by Doc Whipple.
It often surprises me a little bit just how ambiguous these old shows can be. Sometimes they're not at all the straight-ahead melodrama I expect them to be. That was a case in point. Wasn't really all that clear exactly what happened. Most of the time, the first time I've heard these programs myself, it's not too long before you hear them on the air. It's not like I have some vast knowledge of vintage radio. I can remember being a kid in the 50s, and listening to Gunsmoke and Armis Brooks and Suspense there at the very end, the dead end, I suppose, of the golden age of radio. Anyway, I'm going to go home now. And I'd like for you, and one more time, I'm going to ask you to write me. I'm going to beg for you to write me. Look, it's just you and me. Really, I don't know. Maybe it's really just me sitting here talking to myself. I really don't know if anybody's listening to this show, unless you write us, unless you let us know. I'm Gary Clinton, and you can write me at Night Transmissions, one word, no space between the night and the transmissions, nighttransmissions@gmail.com. I'd like to hear from you. I'd like to know there's somebody listening. Good night. Good morning. Now that wasn't too undignified, was it? Here's Billy May and his orchestra once again playing Rhapsody in Blue, composed by George Gershwin.